Welcome to KDVS, 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Dr. Andy, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We've got two great guests scheduled for today's show. John Amon is here in Davis. He'll be giving a reading tonight at the Avid Reader on 2nd Street at 8 o'clock. He'll be joining us for the second half hour. And for the first half hour, Jonathan Shao. He's a Massachusetts attorney and the author of Buying and Owning a Mac, Secrets Apple Doesn't Want You to Know. We're going to talk about the new iPhone. Stick around. This is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS, 90.3 FM, Davis.
This is the Poetry Foundation's Essential American Poets podcast. Essential American Poets is an online audio poetry collection. The poets in the collection were selected in 2006 by Donald Hall when he was Poet Laureate. Recordings of the poets he selected are available online at poetryfoundation.org and poetryarchive.org. In this edition of the podcast, we'll hear poems by...
Everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS, 90.3 FM in Davis. It's a sad day for people who are interested in technology. I'll tell you why in just a moment. But first, I want to tell you about my first guest this afternoon, Jonathan Shao. Jonathan Shao is a Massachusetts attorney, the author of the book Buying and Owning a Mac, Secrets Apple Doesn't Want You to Know. Since becoming an attorney in 2008, he's practiced in a number of areas of law, including litigation, e-discovery and litigation support, business transactions, corporate governance, and consumer protection. He's advised small businesses, technology startups, on issues having to do with litigation preparedness and dispute resolution. He's also been very active in Massachusetts as an attorney, representing clients on a pro bono basis through the Boston Bar Association and the Volunteer Lawyers Project. He's also a lifelong Mac enthusiast, as am I, and a contributing writer for cultofmac.com, which has been a terrific Mac blog. He's also a lifelong Mac enthusiast, and his articles have focused on consumer awareness, rights, and advocacy. He has a JD from Golden Gate University School of Law, and, like me, he has a BA from Boston University. Mine was in English. His is in history. I'm very pleased to welcome Jonathan Shao to the program. Jonathan, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Hi, Andy. Hi, everyone. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you here. Well, it's I'm sorry for the occasion, as many people don't yet know. Steve Jobs, the founder of Apple Computer, Apple Incorporated, a visionary, certainly an American hero who, to those of us who care about innovation and technology, has passed away. He was well known for his black turtleneck. He co-founded Apple in a garage in Silicon Valley, if I remember correctly. And he built it into the world's leading tech company, as well as, at least at one point, the world's most valuable company. He died today at the age of 56. So, Jonathan Chow, I know that, like myself, you've followed Apple, the company, very closely. I bet you've written about Steve Jobs and the choices he's made, as well as more broadly about Apple and the legal world. I'm wondering, even though this news is only 10 or 15 minutes old, if you could give us some of your on-the-spot impressions of the life and legacy of Steve Jobs.
Well, I think my experience with Steve Jobs, for the most part, has been that of as a consumer.
Yeah.
And I think the one thing that, from my perspective, that he really did to change the world is that he brought, you know, technology to the people. He made technology interesting to the regular person. He revolutionized technology first with, I guess, in recent years, beginning with the iPod. Obviously, it goes far back beyond that, but things really started to pick up with the iPod, and then the iPhone, obviously, which was initially going to be the subject of today's call. But, you know, one of the things that I commonly write about is how easy Apple as a company, and how obviously this is certainly through design, obviously by through Steve Jobs, they make everything so easy for the consumer, whether it's the consumer's interaction with their computer, with their Mac, with their iPhone, or even trying to get service and support or shopping for a Mac at a store, for example. The whole experience is unlike any other, and I think that's, you know, one of the things that he really did to change the world, really.
Absolutely. We think of how accessible he made these consumer technologies that you speak of, and also how beautiful they are, that they are simultaneously very functional, much easier to use than most alternatives, but also works of art and works of beauty, with his focus on every element of design.
Exactly. I think design's played a huge part in all of Apple products since the inception of Apple Computer, really. And you know, everyone wants an iPhone. Everyone wants a MacBook Pro. Everyone wants a MacBook Air. No one really wants, or at least no one goes around saying, I really want or I'm really happy with this particular MP3 player from another company. It's always been, you know, about these Apple products and their design and how it essentially just, I don't know, turns something on in the eyes of the consumer. And he was able to do that very well with all of Apple's products. And, you know, I'm certainly, I certainly agree with that.
I'd say, too, that from the way that you describe it, his products in other markets, something so beautiful and so functional, might be considered only possible as a luxury item for the very rich. And what he was able to do was to take that focus on highest possible quality, highest possible consumer satisfaction with his products, and highest attention to the design of his products, and make them widely available. Mac products, Apple products, rather, have always been more expensive than their alternatives, but people who value their time and who want their products just to work, they often chose to make that investment and expect the long-term payoff.
Yeah, so that's one of the things that always fascinated and excited me about Apple, is that you have a problem with your Apple product. You have a problem with your iPhone. You contact Apple. You go to a Genius Bar and they fix it for you. They fix it for you right there. And no other company, in my experience, really does this. And they really, you know, through Steve Jobs and his management of the company, he's really brought this, you know, other area of the corporate experience, of the consumer experience, to the consumer by making these things so easy. It's no longer a headache to get your laptop repaired because it's defective. You either mail it in and they turn it around certainly quicker than, in my experience, other companies, or you go to an Apple store and they'll do it for you that same day. And they make you feel good about it. And I think that's something that, you know, really sets Apple Computer apart, sets Apple as a company apart from many other corporations. And obviously, you know, through Steve Jobs' management of the company, this is a big, a very important aspect. And I think it's one of the most unique things about Apple.
We're talking with Jonathan Chow this afternoon. He's a Massachusetts attorney and the author of Buying and Owning a Mac, a publication about Apple computers and Apple the company on the day when we're discovering the sad news that Steve Jobs has passed away earlier today, the founder of Apple Computer, founded in a Silicon Valley garage. He was separated for Apple during a number of years. Some consider them the dark years. But when he returned, he came with ingenious ideas for popular consumer electronics, most notably the iPod, which offered 10,000 songs in your pocket, was the very first iPod. And then as the computing power of those little devices grew, all of us discovered with Steve Jobs that one could do so much more with a pocket device, iPods becoming iPod touches becoming iPhones, and that sort of success spreading not only to Apple computers, but also to products such as the iPad that I have right here, on which I have saved the biography of my guest, Jonathan Chow, as well as products such as the MacBook Air and other highly coveted consumer products that have deep penetration in terms of their users, especially here in California. Jonathan, we're going to take a quick break, if that's all right. And then when we come back, I'd like to hear a little bit more about some of the writing that you've done about Macs and other thoughts that you have on the life and legacy of Steve Jobs, who passed away today here in California. My name is Dr. Andy. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS. We're talking about Steve Jobs this afternoon, who we've just learned has passed away. Many people considered him, passed away at the age of 56, many people considered him to be a modern Leonardo da Vinci, because of all of the different ways that his inventions, his ideas, went on to change industries, whether it be the music industry, the film industry, photography, filmmaking and consumer filmmaking, and then certainly and obviously the computer industry, and then also other industries that didn't exist before Steve Jobs and others helped to dream them up. I already spoke of iPods, but also of the most, most people would say the most accomplished smartphone being the iPhone, and then the clear leader with, I think, about 80% market share of tablet computers, and that being the iPad. And I should say that I've got my iPhone in my pocket and my MacBook Pro and my iPad sitting here next to me. They're all necessary tools for the work and the research that I do for Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Jonathan Shao is talking to us today about this news. He's the author of Buying and Owning a Mac, Secrets Apple Doesn't Want You to Know. And I really appreciate his joining me on this dark day of Apple fandom and Apple enthusiasts like himself and myself. Could you say a little bit more, Jonathan, about some of the writing on Apple that you've done for cultofmac.com and elsewhere?
Yeah, I mostly publish articles through Cult of Mac, and typically the focus has been on consumer protection issues. You know, one of the underlying themes of my articles has always been, you know, Apple Computer makes it really easy. Why not, you know, take advantage of how easy they make it? And by it, I mean getting customer service, getting defects and whatnot serviced and repaired when something goes wrong with your Mac. And I started thinking about writing articles shortly after graduating law school, and started writing the book itself while I was actually preparing for the bar exam in Massachusetts. And I got the idea through my experiences through the years, taking problem issue Macs into the Apple store, and every time I walked out, I was amazed at how easy they made it. Typically, I found myself waiting a matter of minutes or maybe up to an hour to get some problem that used to take 6 to 8 weeks to get remedied back in the 90s with other companies. And it always baffled me when I would run into someone in a coffee shop or a friend or a relative and notice that something was wrong with their Mac. The issue that I write about a lot is the white line of white MacBooks where the plastic would kind of prematurely crack. And I would notice this on people's Mac computers, and I'd ask them, well, why haven't they gotten it repaired? And usually the response would be, I didn't know they would fix it. I thought it was something I did. And that would begin a long conversation explaining the variances of the law pertaining to defects and warranty law, and I'd usually end with me encouraging them to take the Mac in and get it fixed. And most of the time, that is what resulted. They would take their computer in to get repaired, and everyone was always pleasantly surprised and sometimes amazed at how easy Apple made it for them. And that typically has been one of the driving forces behind my articles has been to just get the word out and encourage people to realize that this really is something extra, something new that Apple as a company seems to offer for their products. Certainly, other companies always have warranty service plans and whatnot, but Apple makes it easy, and it's something that I feel, at least in my experience, not enough people know about. And when they do find out about it, they're always absolutely thrilled. And obviously, that part of their business model has played a huge role, I think, in their overall customer satisfaction rates over the years. And frankly, their customer loyalty, the fact that they have a cult following, has a lot to do with that.
I think you're right. John Shao, we've got a caller who would like to share some thoughts. Hold on one moment. Hi, caller. Welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. I have your question or comment, please.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that AppleCare is pretty much just a standard hardware warranty. It's just called AppleCare.
All right.
Yes, well, would you like me to respond?
Sure, please do.
Well, there's a difference between AppleCare and the one-year limited warranty that comes with every Mac, whether you buy it direct from Apple or even used or through a third-party retailer. The one-year limited warranty obviously is exactly what it says it is. It's a limited warranty that lasts for 1 year after the purchase of the Mac, while AppleCare is an additional service plan, which you is an option, and you can purchase it at any point within the first year after you purchase the Mac. And basically what AppleCare does is, in addition to giving you some additional service options, it also basically, most simply stated, extends your warranty by anywhere from 1 to 2 years, depending on the product you're buying the AppleCare on.
So there is a standard warranty. And that one-year limited warranty, how does that compare? Do you have a sense of how that compares to other manufacturers of computers or even other consumer electronics?
A one-year warranty is pretty standard for most consumer electronics. It depends on where you're buying it from. I know they do vary. Some offer shorter periods, some offer longer periods. But the thing that I focus on typically in my articles isn't so much the fact of the one-year warranty, but the fact that Apple is usually very quick to live up to its warranty. In that, especially if you are lucky enough to live near an Apple store, you typically can just walk in, schedule a Genius Bar appointment, and get your issue remedied that day, which is something far and beyond what I've seen in my experience with other companies. Certainly, other companies do a great job at servicing their computers as well. Many have on-site service locations. But in my experience, it has principally been with Macs, and my experience has always been a good one. And through my conversations with friends, family, and colleagues, I don't feel as if enough people really understand how easy it is to take full advantage of the warranty.
That makes sense. Well, John Chow, if you don't mind, I'll tell a quick story of my impression of Mac fandom and my participation in it. And then I'll ask if you have an equivalent story yourself or anything that you'd like to add or comment upon. And my story is this. I've lived in Davis or Sacramento, California for the last 21 years. And as a result, I had relatively easy access to the Moscone Center in San Francisco. And my friend Roy and I would almost invariably, where we lived or what was going on in our lives, we would take a break from our responsibilities and carpool or train pool over to San Francisco and spend a day at just the expo. Now, certainly I could have been learning a lot had I attended the many talks and briefings and classes that happen at Macworld, or used to happen at Macworld every January. But we were more interested in how has Apple's innovation spurred others to follow? So we would spend our day on the expo floor at Macworld San Francisco, and we always had a wonderful time. And I think that's true in part because of the enthusiasm, the excitement in the air. And I'd say that this is true for very few other products, where so many people come together to celebrate, talk about, share, show off those particular products, especially in the way that Apple did it. And this must have been, in part, Steve Jobs' work. Steve Jobs, who passed away today at the age of 56. And that is this idea of the theatrical revelation, that although rumors would come out about what Steve Jobs was going to present, he did an excellent job as a presenter. And this came back in part to the design concerns that were so central to his success as an executive, as well as Apple's success, with the keynotes that he would offer. In fact, the Apple equivalent of PowerPoint was eventually named Keynote, I think, in his honor because of the great success that Jobs had with keynotes. And that is, when I talk about the theatrical reveal, that means that he had a number of things to share, to brag about, and then to present to the Mac faithful. And almost always, just when he seemed like he was just about to finish this grand presentation to all of the impressed people, he would say, oh, you know what, there's just one more thing. A little bit like Columbo, the late Peter Falk, when he seemed just to be leaving a potential suspect for a crime. He'd turn around and say, wait, there's just one more thing. One last question. So the just one more thing usually was some sort of product or revelation or discovery that had could not have been anticipated by the Mac faithful, and that just drove them all wild. And as a result, every January at Macworld, Apple had some control over not only what sort of products that we cared about and kind of a glimpse of the future that you can actually own, you know, in a commodified way, but also Apple did a great job of owning the news cycle. That these revelation, you know, these product presentations, that's really all they were, became events that were covered heavily in the news. And so because of their attention to what they did in terms of not only design, but the highest possible quality and innovative qualities of their products, Steve Jobs, the late founder of Apple Incorporated, was able to get all of us excited about technology, design, and innovation in ways that I think have not been true for any other CEO or any other company. Did you ever have a chance to see Steve Jobs speak, John?
Unfortunately, no. I've attended a couple Macworlds, a few especially when I was a lot younger, but no, I've never actually seen him speak, and I wish I had.
Yeah, same here. Do you have a story, though, of Mac enthusiasm or advocacy, either yours or some that you've encountered along the years?
Well, I think an apt reference here is, you know, certainly my first experience walking into an Apple store. I mean, these stores are constructed almost like cathedrals with the way the buildings are constructed, the high ceilings, the way they put the products all over the floor. It's kind of almost like a religious experience walking into one of these stores. And what's more is when you are near one of these stores on or around the release of one of Apple's products, for example, the iPhone. The first time I ever experienced one of the Apple Store lines, those lines that wrap, they go for blocks and blocks, was, I believe it was in San Francisco, when they announced the first iPhone.
Right.
And I think the most lasting impression that I've ever had on any sort of Apple event or Apple products has been the fans, has been the customers lining up for sometimes miles just to get their hands on one. And I've never seen that anywhere else, in any other company, any other product. I've never seen it like Apple. And it just goes to show, you know, how their product design, their marketing, everything has struck a chord in the consumer. And I think that, you know, the fact that people keep lining up for their products is testament to how great of a job they've done over the years.
Absolutely. Well, it's a sad day with the death of Steve Jobs that's brought us together to talk about Apple Computer. But I really appreciate that the serendipity of we were going to talk about iPhone releases and products and the future of the iPhone. But I'm really pleased to have a fellow Apple fan on the radio with me to remember Steve Jobs, who passed away today at the age of 56. And I'll remind everyone that Jonathan Schau, Z-S-C-H-A-U, is a Massachusetts attorney. He's the author of Buying and Owning a Mac. John, I really appreciate you coming on today and sharing with us your thoughts on this sad day for Apple fans.
Thanks for having me.
Take care.
Bye.
You're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Dr. Andy. Stick around because John Amon is here. He's a poet, a musician, and an artist, and he'll be reading tonight at the Avid Reader at 617 2nd Street, across the street from the majestic Varsity Theater, right here in the city of Davis. My name is Dr. Andy, and we'll be back in a moment with more of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS, 90.3 FM, Davis. The pizza buffet reminds us all that breast cancer claimed 43,000 lives last year. An early diagnosis provides you with an excellent chance of successful treatment. Obtain screening mammograms at recommended intervals. This important reminder is brought to you by the concerned staff at Eats a Pizza Buffet at 6023 Florin Road in Sacramento. For information, they can be reached at 916-231-9900. On the air because they care about the health of the women in our community.
The Linux Users Group of Davis, or LUGOD, is a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting the Linux computer operating system and other open source products as an alternative to expensive, proprietary, and monopolistic software. LUGOD meets in Davis on the first Tuesday and third Monday of each month. For more information, visit LUGOD's website at lugod.org or contact Bill Kendrick at 530-759-1019 or via email at root@lugod.org.
Just shared a message about Bill Kendrick and the Linux Users Group of Davis. Then received a message on Twitter that Bill's laughing about my comparing Steve Jobs as just one more thing to Columbo's just one question. If you would like to drop me a tweet, as the kids say, then I invite you to follow me. I'm at andyojones.com. That's Andy, the letter O, and then the name Jones. Andyojones.com is where I do my tweeting, although I don't have a dedicated Twitter account for this radio show. There is one for the Poetry Night reading series. Poetryindavis.com is the website. It's also the group name on Facebook. It's also the name of the Twitter account, Poetry in Davis. That's where you can go to find out that John Amon is reading tonight at none other than the Avid Reader, 617 2nd Street, here in the city of Davis. That's between E and F. our independent bookstore. And it is a place that really supports the community of writers and readers with events such as John Amon Reading Tonight. Let me tell you a little bit about John. He's here in the studio. As a musician, he performs with a band as well as a solo act and has released two folk or folk rock CDs, All Never Need and Ridiculous Empire. He's also an artist and works with oils, acrylics, colored pencils, and pastels on a variety of surfaces, including canvas, paper, and cardboards. He's the author of three collections of poetry, Christening the Dancer, More of Me Disappears, and At the Threshold of Alchemy. His poetry has appeared in various journals and anthologies, including a number of impressive ones, such as Rattle, the New York Quarterly, International Poetry Review, Gargoyle, and Blood to Remember. He's the founder and editor of the award-winning literary bi-monthly Pedestal magazine. And my the intern for this radio show, she told me today that one of the poets who we've been recruiting to come on this radio show later on in the fall has on her biography that she's published poetry in Pedestal magazine. It's a small world, and John Amon seems to be one of the hubs of it. He travels widely to give readings, perform music, and conduct workshops. He'll be reading his poetry tonight at The Avid Reader. It's been described as by some as vivid, intense, and electric. That certainly raises the bar for my second guest this afternoon. John Amon, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Well, hello. Glad to be here today. Thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. Good to have you here. Thanks for standing up as I do. You know, I think... If you're going to do radio, you might as well stand up so you don't sound like you're too complacent with yourself.
I think there's too much sitting going on in there.
Yeah.
Couldn't stand up for a while.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you'll be standing behind a podium or maybe a music stand tonight at the Avid Reader. Last time I saw you read, it was a number of years ago at the Sacramento Poetry Center.
Right.
And my colleague Brad Henderson and I, we resolved to, next time you're in town, to bring you to Davis.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that you're giving a reading around here. Tell me a little bit about the work that you'll be reading from tonight and also about this poetry tour that you're in the middle of.
Well, I'll start with the tour. I flew into L.A., about a week ago. I was in the Los Angeles area for about a week, reading in different venues, led a couple writing workshops.
And remind me where you flew in from?
From Charlotte, North Carolina, all the way across the country. And it's great to be on the West Coast. I love the West Coast. It's really a fun place. It's great energy. And so I've been in this area now for two or three days. Read it again at Sacramento Poetry Center on Monday.
Right.
With my friend Daniel Y. Harris. And, you know, looking forward to reading tonight.
So,
and as far as the work goes, I mean, I have a few poems that are definites, but then I sort of also like to just see how the evening flows and what sort of audience there is and kind of gauge it from there as to what, you know, what might be the best content to go with.
Yeah. You and I have both given poetry readings to small devoted audiences and then to, you know, what might be charitably described as a crowd.
Mm-hmm.
I'm expecting at least 25 at the Avid Reader tonight, depending on how many of you listeners show up. I hope you'll consider it. You can handle the rain. Californians have trouble with rain. I don't know if you knew this stuff.
Yeah, I think everybody does.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't take a lot for people to be inconvenienced. So the rain has stopped. So come on out tonight.
Oh, I think people should.
rain or no rain.
And it's fun, too, to give a reading in a bookstore because, really, bookstores are at the vanguard of trying to continue to get people interested in reading.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful to Amazon.com for the variety of ways that it has supported my reading habits and my wife's consuming habits. However, I like looking in the eyes of the person I'm handing my money to.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I get the sense with an independent bookstore that I'm contributing to the cultural lifeblood of a community and not just sending it off to the other side of the country.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's something communal, like you say, about a bookstore. I mean, it keeps us connected to history.
Yeah.
You know, the history of reading, the history of books. You know, I mean, as wonderful as some of the technology is, there is something that can be kind of disembodying about over-reliance on that. So, yeah, I enjoy being in bookstores too, actually looking through shelves, you know, but yeah, people coming in to actually share a reading experience. Yeah, so I look forward to it, yeah.
Me too. We're talking about the Avid Reader Bookstore, and John Amon, my guest, will be reading there tonight at 8 o'clock. That's at 617 2nd Street, right here in the heart of Davis, between E and F Streets. So I hope at least that you'll go check that out. John, how would you, or how do people, characterize your poetry? You've got three books, and I'm wondering if you explore different themes, or if it's if there's like a John Amon voice that one hears throughout those three books.
Well, I mean, yeah, I have my my sense of that. And it's interesting how others respond to your work. I mean, generally speaking, other people respond in very different ways than you would respond, you know, than maybe the original motivation was. That's the beauty of reader response.
Right.
I mean, I think it's just fascinating how people can take a poem way beyond perhaps what was intended. That said, I think in my first book, Christening the Dancer, there was a lot of exploration of the past, including family dynamics, family history, family dysfunction. In a sense, sort of trying to make peace with the past, so that metaphorically the dancer could be born. So there's a sense of going for some kind of resolution, so that, you know, the present can actually begin.
Right.
I think there are elements of that continue to run through the work, but I think more. With the second, and definitely at the threshold of alchemy, there's a greater immediacy with the content, and I'd like to think that the voice has expanded, that there are different voices actually, mm-hmm. you know, different content needing different voices, so that there's narrative poetry, there's more explorative or nonlinear poetry, there are surreal pieces. I've always tried to embrace the form that seemed most compatible with the content. So, but yeah, I mean, I mean, I'd like to think there's been an evolution or an expansion, even an integration of sorts.
Excellent.
Yeah.
John Amon is my guest, and we're talking about his most recent books of poetry, including At the Threshold of Alchemy. I'll be reading from that and other works tonight at the Avid Reader at 8 o'clock. John, we're going to take a quick break and hear a public service announcement. And then when we return, I'm going to ask you to share a radio-ready poem with my Avid listeners.
Okay.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS, 90.3 FM in Davis.
are many ways to measure success. For the Shriners, it's the nearly 700,000 children with orthopedic and burn problems that they've helped. This is Ricardo Montalban. For over 80 years, the Shriners have provided state-of-the-art medical care to kids all over North America, totally free of charge. There is a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area. If you know a child that the Shriners might be able to help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
This is Dr. Andy of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. I'd like to thank all of the folks who have been commenting on this program and on my earlier discussion with John Shao on the topic of the death of Steve Jobs today at the age of 56. We heard on Facebook from Richard Proctor, the former editor of the California Aggie, Ben Orlove, professor of anthropology at Columbia University in New York, and Ryan Galani, who is also sad because of my bringing up Columbo and the death of Peter Falk this year. So thanks to all of you for your comments and for tuning in to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDBS. If you are local, so I won't expect Ben Orlove to be there, but if you're local, you're also heartily invited to come by the Avid Reader tonight at 8 o'clock to see my guest, John Amon, read from his recent books of poetry. So, John, what is the poem that you're going to share with us this afternoon from this particular book?
Okay, well, I'll read the opening poem in the first book. So the first book was Christening the Dancer, and this is the first poem in that book called Ghosts of Spring. Each year, kudzu rampages, wielding its spear of breath, its infallible verse, the rattle of my elders. In the heart of the rose, my mother dies, each unfurled petal cradling in its red palm her last muffled scream. My father convulses in the stamen of the iris. The monster of May shakes its fragile crib, learns to walk in the gauntlet of the dead.
That's intense. You spoke earlier about the presence of the past in that your first book and how important that was. I'm sure that if we're talking about a Southern past, were you born and raised in North Carolina?
It's a little complicated,
okay,
as most stories are, I suppose. But yeah, I was pretty much, yeah, I got there when I was very young. Shuffled around between a couple of households, but ended up there when I was five. Yeah, outside. Grew up outside Asheville.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But especially here in the West, unless we seek them out, we don't really get as many representations of the South, of Southern history, of, I talked about the presence of the past, but the presence of the Civil War history and how that's kind of still a vexed relationship with the past. Mm. And also the tremendous stories that I remember from the first time I heard you read that inform your poems. One, if one's read the books, one can't help but think of Faulkner and the ways that he represented Southern families that I bet were even more dysfunctional than yours.
Well, I'll concede that one.
Yeah.
Reluctantly, but okay.
Yeah. So you talked about in your most recent book of poetry that there's a kind of more of an immediacy. Is it a Southern immediacy, or does it stand mostly outside of this kind of larger concept of geography that I've been speaking of?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure that I mean, I do feel a real affinity with the South, definitely. I think it's the images of the South, primarily, things like magnolia,
right,
fireflies, the particular
feel of the southern summer, the humidity, the heat, the wetness. I think that there's those that kind of there's like a context of imagery that connects me to the South. I'm not sure about the stories specifically or the characters, but I do think a lot of the stories are unfolding in a somewhat southern set or choreography.
Right.
So there's that connection, and I am aware when I travel of how much I love. Well, there's parts of the South that I really love, especially what I mentioned. I mean, it's just sort of that archetypal connection to the images of the South. Other than that, I'm not sure. I'm not sure of the connection to the region in terms of history or the particular characters or that sort of thing. But I think there's a voluptuousness you find in the South, and I think that finds its way into a lot of my poems.
I remember from the previous reading that you had given that. From what I remember, it was more like a personal history, and that it took place in the South was perhaps more incidental rather than foundational. Mm-hmm. But I was just reminded of Faulkner just because of the different ways that you explored those family relationships, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, it's a great connection. You know, I mean, when you think about like As I Lay Dying or something like that, I mean, just the idiosyncratic nature of those characters and the particular location. Yeah, there is something memorable about that. I think some of it is the uniqueness comes from the uniqueness of the experience, but some of it also is just that region, particularly in the spring and the summer, is there's just. I mean, you just don't find that in other areas. Of course, I may be biased. So.
Right. Well, I grew up with a milder version of that in Washington, D.C., but I do remember immediately and readily the kind of oppressive, you mentioned voluptuousness, but just the thickness of the humid air and the summer.
Oh, yeah.
And how evening seem like a time of liberation because you can leave, you can go out and play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a kid, I played way too late into way too many evenings, mm-hmm. ignoring the rule of when the streetlights come on, you come home. Right. I was just, you know, out there having a fun time as a kid. And that seemed to me part of like the cycle of the year. And so we had a very mild summer here in Davis. I spent most of it commuting by bicycle. Mm-hmm. And, It almost feels like you've stepped outside of time because I didn't have or enjoy that oppressive humidity of the summer or even the oppressive heat that sometimes we associate with Davis in the summertime.
Right. So now you miss it.
Exactly. And I miss that sense of a cycle.
Yeah.
Which we usually East Coasters usually associate with snow.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it's, where did summer go?
Yeah.
It was
just
one big Californian, neo spring.
Yeah, we had I think it was maybe 3 or 4 years ago, we had a really, what felt like a really long spring. It rained a lot. And basically, it really didn't feel like full-blown summer until August. And then it kind of passed in October. And it was, I had a similar feeling, like, this was not quite summer. And it felt a little odd. So yeah, there's something about the summer in the South. It's you mentioned D.C. where all those pear trees and apple trees,
right,
with those incredible white blossoms.
Absolutely,
magnolias are like that too, and the dogwoods.
Yeah.
So those are things that just those images run really deep.
Yeah. Well, folks, listening at home, if you want to hear some of those images represented tonight in a poetry reading, then you should head over to the Avid Reader. I'm really pleased that I can help to sponsor some poetry readings at bookstores instead of just galleries and restaurants, as I've done in the past. So if you would like to see this continue, then perhaps you'll show up tonight to 617 2nd Street to see my guest, John Amen, read from his three books of poetry. John, it's been a real pleasure to have you on the radio show. I look forward to introducing you tonight at the Avid Reader.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's great. I look forward to tonight.
Yeah, me too. Well, folks, we're almost out of time, but first I think I need to read something to you. And that is this important message brought to you by KDVS and the Food Bank of Yolo County. I think we need some music for this. Every night, more than 5 million Californians go to bed hungry. For the past 40 years, the Food Bank of Yolo County has worked to feed needy residents throughout Yolo County. Beginning as an all-volunteer effort, the Food Bank has grown into a major resource center that distributes food to nearly 20,000 people each month. Due to the ongoing economic crisis, the number of hungry people continues to grow daily. The need for volunteers, donations, and advocates has never been greater. Learn more about how you can join the fight against hunger by visiting foodbankyc.org. I'd like to thank my guests who appeared on the program this afternoon. Jonathan Chow joined us right at 5 o'clock from his home in Massachusetts. I think he lives in Boston. And we talked about, sadly, the death of Steve Jobs, who passed away today at the age of 56. And then just now, I enjoyed a conversation with John Amen. He's the poet, musician, and artist who will be reading from his poetry tonight at the Avid Reader, 617 2nd Street, here in the city of Davis. If you want to find out more about that, you can visit the Avid Reader website or poetryindavis.com. I'm also grateful to Pia Bauer. She is the intern for this radio show, and she's been booking me all sorts of terrific guests, including a couple weeks from now, a woman who's an expert in science and technology and women in science. Phil Kendrick was also responsible for nabbing me that guest. We'll see how that works out. But the commitments from different interesting people are piling up. So I hope that you'll keep your radio always right here on KDVS. For instance, right after Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, Cool and Deadly is about to come on with DJ Tangathorus Rex. So stick around for that. I'm headed home and then off to the Avid Reader by 8 o'clock. Perhaps I'll see you tonight. If not, I'll see you next week for another edition of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.